Hello and welcome to the Veterinary Secrets Podcast. My name is Dr. Andrew Jones, and this is episode 16. In today's episode, I'm going to talk to you about cat declawing and why I think it should be banned. Then I'm going to discuss what you can give if your dog or cat is not eating. Then finally, I'm going to answer a listener's question. Dr. Jones, if you could bring one thing from your veterinary clinic to treat sick animals, what would it be? Now Veterinary Secrets is on iTunes. Just go to iTunes and search for Veterinary Secrets. We're also on Stitcher. You can download the Stitcher app and search for Veterinary Secrets. I'd sure appreciate it if you'd subscribe to my podcast and leave a review. You can do so on iTunes or Stitcher. Any questions or comments, feel free to post a comment on my blog at veterinarysecrets.com/blog, or you can send me an email, and that's at podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. Let's get right into today's podcast. I'm going to start with a fairly serious topic in terms of why I think cat declawing should be banned. There was a fairly recent poll which surprised me in that nearly 60% of American pet owners, including 55% of cat owners, say that it's okay to have a cat declawed, but only 8% approve of having a dog's vocal cords removed. And that was according to a poll from PetSide.com. My thoughts? Both procedures are unethical. I've never removed a dog's vocal cords, and I completely stopped performing declawing in my veterinary practice. Declawing itself is an amputation of the last joint of your cat's feet. You know, if you've ever cut the end of your finger, you can just have a small sense of how painful this is. You know, imagine removing the ends of all of your fingers, have them bandaged, then just be left with mild pain medication that won't give you 24 hours of pain control. I mean, hopefully the surgery then heals properly, for complications such as chronic infections are not uncommon. Now then imagine trying to tie your shoes using a comb or holding a fork. This procedure is extremely painful whether or not pain medication is used. I mean, this changes your cat's anatomy, affecting how they walk. Removing the claws drastically alters the conformation of their feet. Your cat also loses the main way to defend themselves. You know, they can now much more easily be attacked and killed by predators, being unable to defend themselves properly. You know, some clients reported that their once friendly cat develops a more aggressive personality. They literally have a completely changed behavior. In my opinion, this is an unethical procedure that veterinarians should stop immediately performing now. It's illegal throughout Europe. You know, if you have a cat scratching problem, start with some common sense suggestions that I'll list here. You know, one, keep your cat's nails short, as in learn how to cut them properly at home. It's very easy. You can go to your veterinarian, you can go to your groomer. Many people can easily show you how to cut your cat's nails properly. Scratching posts. Give them multiple spots to scratch, you know, or where they want to scratch. So have more than one scratching post. You can consider alternatives such as the nail covers called soft paws. Give your cat some more stimulation. Consider letting them go outside. More stimulating toys. Then lastly, consider decreasing anxiety in your cat. Some of the options include feel away, which is a natural pheromone, rescue remedy, homeopath anxiety, it's a homeopathic, and a supplement, L-theanine. You can read my blog post on natural anxiety relief here. It's at theinternetpetvet.com/natural sedatives for dogs and cats. Now we're on to the second part of today's podcast. In particular, is about what you can give if your dog or cat is not eating anorexin. I mean, what can you do to get your pet to start eating again? This can be a decrease in their appetite, or it can be that your dog or cat completely stops eating. If this has persisted, then your pet may be lethargic, weak, although you don't want to wait too long for serious clinical signs to appear. I mean, the causes are varied. They can include a sore tooth, to an abscess, to cancer. The important thing here is to get your dog or cat eating again before a 24-hour period of anorexia causes further illness. This is especially important for cats who can develop a condition called fatty liver if they go for 48 hours or more without eating. So here are some specific suggestions for you to consider. First, seeing your veterinarian. Now, if your pet, your dog or cat, is very lethargic, not eating or drinking, and becoming dehydrated, then you need to see your veterinarian ASAP. Ideally, you're treating your dog or cat for anorexia before they completely stop eating or drinking. If this is the case, though, then your veterinarian will perform additional diagnostic tests, and this may lead to force feeding your pet or even placing in some type of feeding tube. Offering something tasty. Canned food is much more nutritionally dense and often more appealing. Your dog or cat will respond much more favorably to a higher protein, sweet-smelling canned food, especially fish flavored. And this next suggestion helped me with my last dog, Jesse, when he stopped eating. Warm it up and add flavor. So he started out, his appetite started to drop. He started out, he was happy to eat the canned food, and then even then, he couldn't quite smell it. So what I did was this suggestion. I warmed it up and added a bit of flavor. And he was a sick dog, and he lost a sense of smell, and this is very common. Our pets that are often sick have a poor sense of smell. So I had good luck, and I think you could too, by helping them eat, by warming up that canned food. And you can also make it a little bit more tasty by adding something such as garlic powder, or even flavoring with beef or chicken OXO cubes. Don't forget your B vitamins. So B vitamins are especially important for most of your pet cellular functions to help the brain function properly, the heart, the muscles, most enzyme systems, and overall energy levels. These are given to most anorexic dogs and cats on IV at a veterinary clinic. And in some cases, the B vitamins may stimulate your pet's appetite again. You can get pediatric B vitamins from a pharmacy for cats, get a B vitamin complex liquid, and dose it similar to an equivalent sized child. Force feed. This is when you're getting to the point where you need to get food into your dog or your cat, and they're just not eating at all. You can purchase specific foods from your veterinarian or pet supply store, which you can make into a canned gruel. So it becomes a liquefied food. Think of, you know, some of those liquid canned drinks that people drink. There's one that I use a lot was Hill's AD. Using a syringe, you can squirt small amounts of that food into your pet's mouth. The average cat, and it's important to know the amount you need to feed your dog or your cat, but the average animal, the average cat, will consume about one of these cans a day, or one can per 10 pounds if you're calculating a dog dose. In force feeding, it's always better to feed frequent small amounts. Catnip. Catnip can act like an appetite stimulant. In these cases, you're just trying to get your dog or cat to start eating, regardless of the underlying cause. For cats, I've had good luck using the herb catnip. It can be given as a tincture to anorexic cats, and it has caused some of them to start eating again. Chamomile or peppermint. These are anti-vomiting herbs, which can be given as a tea. At the very least, they're going to help rehydrate your dog or your cat, and they may make them less nauseous and help them start eating again. You can make a herbal tea of either herb, giving one tablespoon per 10 pounds every 4 to 6 hours. Alfalfa, for general anorexia, not linked to any underlying cause, you can look at the homeopathic alfalfa. And if you're looking at a dose, we're going to be giving one 30C tablet per 10 to 20 pounds 4 times daily. So there are some big, big key ones I think you should keep in mind if you ever happen to have a dog or cat that is not eating. And the last part of today's podcast was answering that question. You know, Dr. Jones, you know, if you could just bring one thing to your veterinary clinic to help sick dogs and cats, what would it be? And I put a little bit of thought into it, a fair amount of thought actually, because I've been asked this question before. And the answer I came up with was sub-Q fluids. I've discussed it in the past. I'll have a blog post on it. And no question, I'm going to discuss it again in the future in different podcasts. You know, and I even have it in my YouTube channel. One of my videos is just about sub-Q fluids, showing you how to give them. The reason why they're so important is for all whole hosts of problems with our dogs and our cats when they become ill to the point they need to go to a veterinarian. A big part is that they're dehydrated, they're unable to drink, so they're throwing up, or they might have excessive diarrhea, or they're just so lethargic, they feel so sick. So a big key thing in treating them is rehydrating them properly. So a real simple way to start with sub-Q fluids. So that's fluids that you're going to give under the skin. The second big advantage of doing these sub-Q fluids is we're also adding in some of the electrolytes that they're lost. So we're replacing sodium, we're replacing potassium, we're replacing chloride, but sodium and potassium in particular. And by replacing these electrolytes along with these fluids, we can just normalize all these different body systems that are not working correctly with the one simple thing, sub-Q fluid. So if you're not comfortable giving it, and I don't think most pet owners are, it's a fairly simple thing to learn, a real, real, real important, and I think important thing to know how to give properly, especially if you're doing any amount of at-home veterinary or dog and cat care at home. Thanks for that question. Well, thanks again for listening. This is Dr. Andrew Jones. And thanks for, you know, if you've had questions, feel free to give me a question. As I said, you can comment on the blog at veterinarysecrets.com/blog, or you can send me an email, and that's at podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. And I'll be talking to you again next week.